I know. And nothing so far. Zip. Nobody's going to lift a finger to go against the IAA. So you'll have to do the test, Black. Rubbing a finger across his chin, Dan said reluctantly, "Looks that way." "Then why are we taking this ride?" The shadow of a smile crossed Dan's face.
He was thinking of the time many years earlier when he had briefly become a privateer, a pirate, hijacking uncrewed spacecraft for their cargoes of ore. It had started as a desperation ploy. The only way a frustrated Dan Randolph could force open the space market that had been closed by monopolists. He had won his war against monopoly and opened the solar system to free competition among individuals, corporations, and governments. But at a price. His smile faded as he remembered the people who had died fighting that brief, unheralded war. He himself had come to within a whisker of being killed. "So," Pancho prodded, "is this a joyride or what?" Putting his thoughts of the past behind him, Dan replied, "I want to see the crew module for myself. And we're going to meet the planetary geologist that Zach Freiberg's picked out for us. The asteroid specialist?" "Yep, he's aboard the ship now. Came up to Selene yesterday and went straight to the ship. He slept aboard last night." Pancho huffed. "Eager beaver. College kid, I bet. He's got a mint new degree from Zurich Polytech." The flight controllers brought the jumper to a smooth rendezvous with Star Power One, while Dan and Pancho stood watching the little transfer buggy linked its airlock adapter section to the hatch of the bigger vessel. They floated through the womb-like adapter to the fusion ship's airlock hatch. The airlock opened into the midsection of the crew module. To their left, Dan saw the accordion-fold doors of a half-dozen privacy compartments lining the passageway. Further up were the galley, a wardroom with a table and six small but plush-looking chairs, and, past an open hatch, the bridge. To their right was the lavatory and closed hatch that led to the equipment and storage bays. Dan headed left toward the galley and the bridge. "Chairs?" Pancho asked, looking puzzled, as they pushed weightlessly past the wardroom, floating a few centimeters above the deck's carpeting. "You'll be accelerating or decelerating most of the way," Dan pointed out. "You won't be spending much time in zero-G. She nodded, looking disappointed with herself. "I knew that. It just didn't latch." Dan understood how she felt. He'd seen the layout of the crew module hundreds of times, viewed 3D mock-ups, and even walked through virtual reality simulations. But being in the real thing was different. He could smell the newness of the metal and fabric. He could reach his hand up and run his fingers along the plastic panels of the overhead. The bridge looked small but shining and already humming with electrical power. "Where's our college boy?" Pancho asked, looking around. "That would be me, I suppose," said a reedy voice from behind them. Turning, Dan saw a husky-looking young man gripping the edges of the open hatch with both hands. He was a shade shorter than Dan, but broad in the shoulders, with a thick, barrel chest, the build of a wrestler. His face was broad, too, a heavy jaw with wide, thin lips and small, deep-set eyes. His hair was cropped so close to his skull that Dan couldn't be sure of its true color. He wore a small glittering stone in his left earlobe, diamond or zircon or glass, Dan could not tell. "I heard you enter. I was in the sensor bay, checking on the equipment," he said in a flat Midwestern American accent, pronounced so precisely that he had to have learned it in a foreign school. "Oh," said Pancho. "I am Lars Fuchs," he said, extending his hand to Dan. "You must be Mr. Randolph." "Pleased to meet you, Dr. Fuchs." Fuchs's hand engulfed his own. The young man's grip was strong, firm. "This is Pancho Lane," Dan went on. "She'll be our pilot on the flight." Fuchs dipped his chin slightly. "Miss Lane." "And, sir, I am not Dr. Fuchs. Not yet." "That's okay. Zach Freiberg recommends you highly." "I am very grateful to Dr. Professor Freiberg. He has been very helpful to me. And my name is Dan. If you call me Mr. Randolph, it'll make me feel like an old man." "Oh, I wouldn't want to offend you, sir, Fuchs said, genuinely alarmed. Just call me Dan. Yes, sir, of course. And you must call me Lars. Turning to Pancho, he added, both of you. That's deal, Lars, said Pancho, sticking out her hand. Fuchs took it gingerly, as if not quite sure what to do. Pancho is a woman's name in America. She laughed. It's this woman's name, Lars, old buddy. Smiling uneasily, Fuchs said, Pancho, as if testing out the name. You handle weightlessness very well, Dan said. From what Zack told me, this is your first time off Earth. Fuchs said, thank you, sir. Dan, I came up last night so I could adapt myself to microgravity before you arrived here. Pancho smiled sympathetically. Spent the night making love to the toilet, huh? Looking flustered, Fuchs said, I did retch a few times, yes. Everybody does, Lars, she said. Nothing to be ashamed of. I am not ashamed, he said, his chin rising a notch. Dan moved between them. Have you picked out which captain you want for yourself? Since you were first aboard, you get first pick. Hey, Pancho griped. I've been aboard this buggy before, you know. So was Amanda. The privacy compartments are all exactly alike, Fuchs said. It doesn't matter which one I get. I'll take the last one on the left, Dan said, peering down the passageway that ran the length of the module. It's closest to the lav. You? Pancho looked surprised. Since when are you coming on the mission? Since about 4 days ago, Dan said. That's when I made up my mind. About a lot of things.
Pelican Bar.
So, here's my plan, Dan said with a grin. He and Pancho were hunched over one of the postage stamp-sized tables in the farthest corner of the Pelican Bar, away from the buzzing conversations and bursts of laughter from the crowd standing at the bar itself. Their heads were almost touching, leaning together like a pair of conspirators. Which they were. Inwardly, Dan marveled at how good he felt. Free. Happy, almost. The double-damned bureaucrats have tried to tie me up in knots. Humphreys is behind it all, playing along with the IAA and those new morality bigots. Those uptight psalm singers don't want us to reach the asteroids. They like the Earth just the way it is. Miserable, hungry, desperate for the kind of order and control that the new morality offers. This greenhouse warming is a blessing for them. The wrath of God smiting the unbelievers. Anything we do to try to help alleviate what they see as a threat to their power. Vaguely, Dan called from his childhood history lessons something about a group called the Nazis back in the 20th century. They came to power because there was an economic depression, and people needed jobs and food, if he remembered his history lessons correctly. So the new morality has its tentacles into the IAA now, Dan thought. And the GEC too, I'll bet. And Humphreys is playing them all like a symphony orchestra, using them to stymie me long enough so he can grab Astra from me. Well, it's not going to be that easy, partner. What's so funny? Pancho asked, looking puzzled. Funny? You say, here's my plan, and then you start grinning like a cat in a canary's cage. Dan took a sip of his brandy and dry, then said, Pancho, I've always said that when the going gets tough, the tough get going, to where the going's easier. I've heard that one before. So, I'm going with you. You. Yep, to the belt. You need a flight engineer. I know the ship's systems as well as anybody. Lordy lord, Pancho muttered. I'm still a qualified astronaut. I'm going with you. But not until we do the uncrewed test flight, she said, reaching for her beer. Leaning across the table even closer to her, Dan said in a hoarse whisper, Screw the test flight. We're going to the belt. You, Amanda, Fuchs, and me. Pancho nearly choked on her mouthful of beer. She sputtered, coughed, then finally asked, What are you drinking, boss? Happy as a pirate on the open sea, Dan said, We'll let them think we're doing exactly what they've told us to do, except that the four of us will happen to be aboard the bird when she breaks orbit. Just like that.